You are listening to Let's Go JoJo, the weekly JoJo's Bizarre Adventure podcast from Dynamite in the Brain, Secret of the Sailor Madness, and no UK Anime Network podcast this week. Elliot is off with his family, apparently, so he can't come along and hang with the Let's Go gang, Dwayne.
Hello.
Niall.
It's JJ Style.
And me, Brian. Yes, it's JJ Style. The catchphrase of the week.
All night long.
So, this week's episode, Another One Bites the Dust, Part 1. And that is episode 35 of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. And now it's, I have watched this over, well, yeah, 4 days ago now at this point, 3 days ago.
That could, might as well be a lifetime.
It could well be, particularly an episode this tricksy in its storytelling.
I watched it just yesterday and I'm still not sure I grasp the entirety of it.
I watched it today and I think I have a good handle on it. Reasonable for the confusingness of it, you know. So
we don't see it on screen. We just like, we kind of just like the start of it before it happens. But yeah, he's blown his son up, or his pretend son up.
I think he's
blown up the hair to make it look like he slipped and fell.
I think he just
smashed
him.
His head. I thought he smashed his head against the, against the floor. I think
he killed him regular human style.
Yes, because he grabs him by the head, and then we don't see anything past that. Yeah. Mm. I think because of the previous time he grabbed somebody by the head, they blew up. Right, yeah, so he smashed his head in, and his dad comes flies through the window in his Polaroid photo, worried about his son, because he's seen Rohan showing the photos to the ghost.
Yeah, he was hanging out all the time.
Yes.
He can fly now, is that just what he can do? He doesn't need to wrangle a crow around?
He just needs an updraft. No, he's like a, his stand ability gives him knowledge of all the crosswinds over Mario.
And while he's talking with his son, the arrow decides, on its own accord, he assures he didn't do it himself.
Look, my hands are... You can see my hands. I didn't do it.
Stab Kira a second time. In fact, more than just stab him, is to sort of go in through his wrist.
Yeah, it wants to, the arrow wants to stab him in the neck, but unfortunately it has to work his way through his entire arm to stab him. Oh, dear. Yeah, that was kind of gross, seeing it moving under the skin and everything.
Those are some bullshit. You already has two stands. Now you have, well, already had a stand with its own stand. Now you get another fucking power on top of that. This is...
Maybe it's just a really benevolent arrow. The arrow's like, oh, what you have isn't good enough. Let me sort you out.
Yeah,
the only way I know how.
Yeah, I wonder if it like seeks out desperate people. People who are desperate in some way or form.
Seeks out weirdos. Yes. Arrow only seems to work on weirdos.
Oh, yeah.
It comes out of his shoulder, then goes into his... Is it under his chin again?
Somewhere in his neck, all right.
Under his neck, there, yeah.
And this grants him a new stand, we learn later on, for right near the end, in fact, what its name is. It's called Bites the Dust, or Killer Queen Bites the Dust.
Yep, as if having two powers from the get-go wasn't enough.
And how to explain how this power works.
Okay, well, I guess we can just explain it as the episode happens, or unless you want to try and explain the denouement of it.
Yeah, because basically the episode is kind of like an explanation of how the power works, or like visualizing how the power works, and then he kind of explains it right at the end. So, the next morning, the kid's alive again.
I thought it initially, like, he's like, did he gain the power to turn people into living bombs? Or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
I thought it might have been something like that. Why he was totally cool with, hey, my son's alive. I'm not worried about this at all. Mm. So, I thought it was something along those lines. But
The son then seems sentient and, you know, doesn't seem to remember being murdered.
I confronted my fake father with the fact that he's a murderer and not my father. But I don't know why I had such trouble sleeping last night.
I don't know why fake father has a groovy new haircut.
Yeah. Like,
all he had to do was fucking backcomb his hair and he gets that shit out of it. That was
that
amazing.
Is that part of the stand ability? You can just kind of change your color of your style of your hair at will?
I just think the guy's face he happened to take had amazing hair. That, you know, you backcomb it, it's a completely different hairstyle. It's a different color, for fuck's sake.
So he goes out. Is it Rohan sees him?
No. The kid goes out, and you know, kid is initially relieved, and it's like, oh, he's gone, and it's like, oh, my son Hayato. let me walk to school with you. He's just hiding behind the door. You forgot your hat. And he's kind of walking to him and saying, ha, ha, ha. Ah, yes, father and son we are, aren't we? We look so happy together, even though I killed you last night. But it's okay right now. I know you know things about me, but I'm confident I feel so happy in the world right now because you're not going to tell anybody. And you know why? Because I've got a new power. I've matured as a life form. And whatever you do, whatever you tell, it's not going to matter to me because it's not going to get back to me.
Yeah, he even very obviously slips out. It's like, can you believe it that me, Yoshigiri Kira, made this kind of mistake? And the kid's like,
oops.
Shit, that's his real name. Whoops, did I say my real name? And it's just like, yeah, he's up to something. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's Rohan who fucking like pulls over in like a Lamborghini now. I guess he traded in the bike or some kind of car. And he's wearing, what is he wearing?
He's wearing knee-high boots, leather pants. It's
kind of like a jacket cape type thing that's fastened again with the little pen nibs. He loves that motif.
He does. I thought this was his best set of clothes yet.
Most of a shirt, but not at the bottom.
Yeah. It's my shoulders ripped, rocking abs, man.
There must be amazing tailors in this town. That's all I can say.
Yeah. Okay, so they use his Heaven's Door to read his memories.
The kid isn't answering questions, so he's just like, Heaven's Door is like, it'll just be quicker if I read him, and no one will totally be creeped out by a dude throwing a kid prone into his car.
But the problem is his memories are of things which haven't happened yet.
Yeah, things that are just about to happen. Yeah. And he's reading through the book, and obviously it says, don't turn this page, Rohan, because you really don't want to turn this page. And he's like, well, now I gotta turn it, because I'm Rohan.
Yes, as we know. It's like, he's irresistible. You can do anything you want, but just tell him to not do something.
Yeah, and he was given out to Josuke for the very same thing. Fuck's sake.
That's why he hates him, because they're actually so alike.
Yeah.
And so he sees Kira's identity, but also behind the page is a tiny killer queen.
Yeah, which he initially tries to use his stand on and then grab, which I'm not sure what that was going to do, but it's like, haha, I'm already inside your eyes.
Yeah, it does look kind of like a hanged man thing where you can just live
inside. Hanged man are like his father's ghostly power is what I was thinking. Because his thing was that he transferred into, what was it, a picture that he was in or something like that?
Anything that he take anything you take a picture of, you can like manipulate whatever is inside, whatever is depicted in that picture.
Yeah, so like you say, some combination of Hangman and his father's weird powers that he's within Rohan's vision, so he's in Rohan's eye, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
Mm.
And then Rohan starts to blow up as he's got a bomb inside him.
Yep. He just keeps on exploding and keeps getting censored more and more. And he's like, oh man, I was going to meet the guys underneath the Pepsi sign soon, and they're coming around the corner. It's if I can just reach them, explodes. He totally explodes to nothing. The kid freaks out, and then
he's back at the breakfast table.
It's all a dream. I hate that kind of cheap out. But it's tied into the plot.
It's so a good explanation, though.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, can you explain exactly what the power is?
So when somebody learns...
I think when someone asks the kid, do you know about this guy, or asks about his stand, or says anything about him, that sets off the bomb.
Yeah, if he reveals information, I guess, unwittingly or not, as in, so it counted because Rohan read him. It counted as the trigger for it. It basically just blow up anybody who finds out about it. Forward.
Yes,
it
and then
blows
it sends
up
him
the person and sends him an hour back in time to before he did that.
Yes, so
not only is the person who learned it dead, but it's back in time, so they haven't learned it yet.
Yeah, and do they say in this what happens to that person in the second time around?
I don't think he said.
Okay.
Okay.
I thought it was.
So the problem is I know, and therefore I don't want to say it if they didn't say it.
Because there's an extra thing on top of it, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, well...
But it's a very bloody Groundhog's Day he's stuck in.
Yeah, I got the impression that when you tell somebody, it'll go back in time, and then, you know, from just the horror of you see what happens if you tell somebody, it'll prevent you, keep you quiet. Because
that was my thinking as well. Yeah, that it's like, obviously Rohan didn't die, isn't going to die for another hour as long as that kid doesn't do exactly the same kind of thing.
Yeah, I thought, because I know Rohan is still alive, because I actually have like a it's one of the comics printed out by association with the Louvre Museum, which I know is set 10 years. After this, so I know he survives.
I was wondering about those like prequels or sidequels or something. Okay.
Anyway, yes, it's kind of nuts, but it's interesting because it's like a rare episode where the entire episode is kind of about a stand power.
Because it's so fucking confusing. it's pretty good. There's a lot of good stuff in this. I did like the repeated talk about under the Pepsi sign.
Yes.
Under the Pepsi sign. Lightning will strike the Pepsi sign.
It's not Depsy or...
not Popsy or Poopsy. It's Pepsi, yeah.
When they stuck it in the last episode, I was like, that's blatant. But it had nothing on this episode.
My favorite bit is when it pierces him in the chin and gives him his second power, because it kind of looks like he gets sucked up into the hole.
Yeah. It looks like it kind of collapses in on itself kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which could be, you know, some kind of visual clue as to the time wackery it's doing.
Mm, that would make sense.
But yeah, this was a good-looking episode after last week's not-so-good-looking episode.
Mm. Mm.
Well, it kind of helps that, you know, they can reuse certain parts of it over again.
That's true. You only have to animate some parts once.
So they can focus more on whatever else is new.
Yeah, the Harbinger of Doom this time wasn't the Morio Radio. It was the Morio Morning News, or whatever you call it, which I guess they're keeping that theme. But, yeah.
Don't watch the news. Listen to it ever.
it's only ever bad news.
The news is some kind of stand ability. The radio is a stand user.
It's trying to warn you shit's going down.
Is this the where he's? Oh, he's biting his fingernails. Bloody, isn't he?
At the start of this one, so bad they're censored, and that's why initially his I was going to say his missus, but not actually his wife. You know, is like, oh, I'll just get the plasters, honey. He's like, no, I'll do it. I cut my fingers in the door. He's trying to hide a dead child's body in the wardrobe, and I was like, ugh. And even his dad's like, wow, that was a really good idea to make it look like an accident, but really bad timing. He's doing all the speed wagoning for the episode, I think.
Well, there's only 4 episodes left. He's got to get himself out of this somewhere. I suspect he won't.
Well, he doesn't deserve to, because he's murdered at least 2 children now.
Yes.
And an uncountable number of other people. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, but one of them he's brought back to life, or somehow rewound time, so he didn't kill them.
Yeah, but he did murder a child.
Yes.
It's not even intent. That's the thing that did happen and then unhappened.
Nah. So now he has a fast punchy guy and I can turn him into a bomb and a little bomb that's a huge
little
bomb
that's
indestructible. And I have kind of like the world but better, kind of.
Yeah, it's actual it's not time stopping, it's time reversing, which is I guess the closest we've seen to it is Josuke, which is technically time reversing. But it's in a very different way, specifically with objects not actually traveling through time.
It's kind of like reversing time within a limited and very particular
to an object.
Set of circumstances rather than in the time-space continuum in general.
Yeah.
Boy, and this is even the most complicated time thing we're going to be talking about on this episode.
That's it. We're fucking time travel week. We got it. Yeah.
But good episode. I'm interested to see how it plays out.
Yeah.
Right, next up, that other time travel-y thing. Dragon Ball Super Episode 67, with new hope in our hearts, farewell, Trunks, in which they utterly fail to save the world.
Well, see, I was thinking, I was like, okay, cutting him in two can't be the end of it, because he's still immortal. I know he's half immortal, but that doesn't even make sense.
Well, I thought, couldn't they just kill like the non... Because you couldn't just kill the non-immortal half of him, and
there's a half of him that's immortal, right?
Yeah, but he wouldn't be as good.
So yes, after exploding, Zamasu becomes the universe.
Initially, I thought he was just becoming the sky, but yeah, he says, "Now I'm the universe. I'm going to kill everything." Yeah, everything.
Yeah. And he does. He kills all the the non-important characters, the ones who've been kept alive these past weeks.
Yep.
Those kids, dead. Yajirobe, dead. Those random
they didn't get Yajirobe.
Dead.
That's impossible.
The two grunt soldiers, your favorite characters, gone.
Yep.
Yeah, so kind of literally become... you literally get got in the machine as Goku presses his button and summons the future king of all.
Well, he was looking in his pocket for a Senzu bean for,
that was it,
I guess,
yes.
To bring back everyone. I don't think that's going to work, Goku. You need a digestive tract to use a Senzu bean.
He's just more like, oh, I'll try fighting them again. You know, I'll try fighting the sky and see what that does.
I was like, oh, wait, I got this magic fucking get out of jail free fucking button. I forgot about that.
Which somehow makes the entire arc not about saving the future or defeating Zamasu. It actually becomes a story about finding a playmate for the king of all.
Yeah, so... The King of All, obviously, this version of the King of All hasn't met Goku because Goku died of a heart attack years ago.
It's the fat Goku just goes straight up and hugs him.
And the dude's like, who the fuck are you? And he's like, hey, check it out. The King of All's like, did you fucking do this? This is horrible. It's like, no, I didn't fucking do it. It was that guy. He points at Sky. I was like, all right, I'm just going to erase this universe. Fucking start anew. And they're all like, shit, to the time machine.
Goku's like, everyone in the time machine, now. Get out of here.
Go.
And Vegeta and Goku have to hang off the outside of it.
Well, yeah, they barely fitted it in the first place. So there's already three people in there.
Bill and Ted vibes all of a sudden.
Yeah, so they managed to just get away from the erasure of Trunks' entire universe. They go back in time, and which was kind of good because Zamasu appeared to be leaking into back in time as well.
Yes.
Presumably he was going to destroy everything all the way back, like, you know. Yeah.
So then Goku goes back to the now non-existent universe and brings the King of All back with him. So now there's two Kings of All.
I don't know if that's the best idea or the worst idea. So basically, you time traveled to the future and brought God back to be best friends with God.
Well, not so many words, but yes.
Yeah, okay. Is that good or bad? I don't know.
I don't know. And I also don't know whether it's good or bad that Whis basically just has to tidy up their mess they've made.
Yeah, Beerus is a bit like fun. You guys, if us guards weren't around, you would be up a creek without a paddle. I didn't want to interfere. We could have helped you out before, but I didn't want you to be relying on us too much now. But I guess things just are what they are right now, so we're going to have to just roll with this. Mm. But don't do it again. I mean, this is getting out of hand now.
Yeah, so Whis travels to the future to take care of Zamasu before all this happened, which unfortunately will mean that if Trunks and Mai return to the future, there'll now be two sets of Trunks.
There'll already be a Trunks and Mai there from the time from before it was destroyed. And they're like, are you guys cool with that? I thought they were just going to live there with everyone else. Just people out of time.
That's what I thought as well.
Because, I mean, like, at least you'll be growing up alongside a younger version of yourself rather than the exact same age version of yourself.
And you could hang out with your mate, Gohan.
Listen, I know Yajirobe survived and everything, and Frankenstein survived, but it's like that universe sucked.
And the turtle survived.
The turtle survived. Well, it's a long-lived animal.
Well, it depends. Like, okay, from what point are they going to start rebuilding the universe now? Before it got completely
fucked?
Before
the androids?
Or just a little bit messed up? Before, like,
the androids
the gods ascended and were all killed.
Well, I guess before the guy became the universe and destroyed everything in the universe.
Yes,
but at that stage, he'd already killed all the gods, yeah.
Yes, but he's in Universe 10, though, so presumably he's going to take care of the stuff in Universe 10, so they don't even get to this universe.
Yeah, so I guess the androids and all that shit still happen.
Yeah.
That's still a kind of apocalyptic situation, but
yes,
okay.
Yeah.
It's less apocalyptic.
It's the apocalyptic situation he's familiar with. As opposed to the one which Goku accidentally inflicted on him by picking a fight with a guy in another universe.
Androids, no problem. Like, biomechanical, like, life-absorbing entities, got it. But this whole immortal entity, I can't really be dealing with that anymore.
Yeah, I honestly thought they were just going to use the Dragon Balls and just go, hey, can, undo that? It's a very complicated worded wish. I think you're going to have to spend a while writing it down, but
oh, Shenlong, grab my wish of take backsies.
Yeah, so again, I think we're in the evil universe. I think Goku has fucked everything up forever for everyone. Making two gods.
King of All's got a friend now.
But are they both god of everything? How does that even work?
Well, they'll do like Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Thursday, Saturday, and then they're doing alternating Sundays.
King of
everything.
And to be fair, Gawasu blames himself for picking Zamasu as his.
I did like the Beerus thing of like, hey, next time be a little more selective, huh? He's like, sorry,
I was so blind. I didn't know that that nice, quiet young man who was so good at making tea would turn out to be the embodiment of all injustice and evil.
I thought if I kept showing him aliens fighting each other as cavemen, that he'd eventually go like, yeah, these guys are all right. I mean, like, that's what I thought straight away after seeing them, but, you know.
Yeah, we also learn the angel who's with the King of All is apparently Whis's dad.
Just look a day over 9,000.
Is there anything else in this episode? I enjoyed it. I can understand why some people would not enjoy it, because it's very, not anticlimactic, but it does feel like the heroes have achieved nothing.
Well, yeah, pretty much. It's kind of like they start in a completely fucked position. So the fact that things got worse was kind of like, yeah, I guess that is kind of bad.
Yeah.
It
could also probably would have gone better if they were better at planning and remembering to take things with them when they go to the future.
Yeah, Whis even takes the piss out of their stupid jar plan. Which, you know, if you brought all the equipment you needed, which that would have been fine,
good
I think.
Plan.
It's not perfect, but it was pretty good.
Well, maybe this could be, in some way, a response to all the people over the years who have said, why don't you just use the Dragon Balls to do X, Y, Z to win this story arc? That would just solve everything much more easily. Yeah. So maybe it's that.
It could well be, considering what the next episode is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Which is great, because this episode is not the best animated, but the next episode, which is just a silly episode about people wanting wishes, is really well animated.
It's pretty good.
I'm looking forward to watching that one, yeah.
Before Trunks and Mai go back to their future, like everyone's saying, goodbye, Trunks, hope you don't see me again, because that'd be really bad news, but goodbye anyway. But
yeah, he's like, until I see you again, and everyone's thinking, like, I guess, like, no. This is only better.
When you go back, smash that time machine.
But before he hops in the time machine, Vegeta's like, Trunks, think fast, watch out! And then, Trunks catches the blow, like, straight away, and it's just, Vegeta's got the little smirk on his face going like, ha ha ha, that's my boy.
Yeah.
And Gohan sees him off by raising the arm that was blown off in the future that Trunks came from.
Yeah, and also Piccolo was there. It's kind of like the thing of like, oh yeah, those guys, yeah. Remember Cool Gohan? Like Cool Guy Scar and one-armed Gohan from the future?
Yeah, he's cool.
Yeah, he's a nerd now. Isn't that great?
He was cool, but he can't have been that good if he's getting his arm lopped off and getting busted off in the face.
And so next week's episode is Goku finally attempting to
get the Dragon Balls to wish King Kai and his mates back to life.
Yes.
I was like, how many years has it taken you to do this?
But then everyone wants to wish all at once, and I thought, I think it's King Kai's turn now.
I think he's earned it.
But we'll talk about that next week. It's a good episode, though. Boy, there's some good-looking stuff coming up with a rally and...
Yes, exciting stuff.
Champa wanting a baseball game.
I think that's the thing of like the this episode. It's not that it's anticlimactic, because it's like, yeah, we're just wrapping up the end of this plot now, and now we get to say the big goodbye, and then we're just going to have parties for the end until the end of the series or
well,
the end of the
probably
season.
Probably not. Yeah, I suspect
maybe not, but they seem to be having a lot of fun episodes now.
Yes, I suspect some of those goof arounds will play out thematically, if not,
yeah,
storyline wise. Righty ho, on to the shorts. Bono Bono, episode 20, Fishing Cat at Play, where we learn that Fishing Cat likes to deduce the stories behind abandoned objects. That's his idea
of playing.
Oh, he's
a cool man. He likes to pick up things off the ground and look at what they are.
You know what he's like? He reminded me so much of Part 4, Jotaro. He's just hanging back and just analysing things and putting all the pieces together.
Okay.
But my favourite bit of this episode is the way that Bono gets mad at him at various points. It exactly captures the way that kids get mad at smart aleck adults who are sort of subtly taking the mickey out of them.
Listen, I know you're talking in super dry tone, and you're not actually like smiling when you're doing anything, but I know you're taking the piss out of me. Yeah.
But yeah, it was a fun episode.
Yeah. Hmm.
It was since I watched it, so I can't remember any specific jokes. But
yeah. Let's kind of peek into the kind of private goings on of some of the lives of the forest inhabitants. Like Raccoon's dad's ongoing feud with Wolverine's dad.
They're just digging traps for each other, yeah. But in a straight line, it's kind of counterintuitive.
So Kyle's walking along and saying, so here's for Raccoon traps Wolverine's dad, and here's for Raccoon's dad traps Wolverine's dad, and so on, so on, so on. And then, if I put on this one again, so obviously that's for Wolverine's dad. So.
The feud continues.
Yes. And then Raccoon is fun. Ah, yes, I know that Raccoon, I saw him the other day floating face down the river. I wonder what happened there. I think it was like he probably tried to play a prank on his dad, and this is what the outcome of it.
Yes. Ninja Girl and Samurai Master, which we get the conceit of the series, finally revealed that it's a behind-the-scenes show about the verbal history of Oda Nobunaga.
Yeah, as the author of his exploits kind of shows up.
Yes, and wants to write Chidori into the story. She's like, no, I'm a ninja, you can't write me in.
Yeah, I'm supposed to be in the shadows, man. I'm behind the scenes doing shit. It's like, all right, so you just tell me what happens.
And then the best joke is that Oda's wife says, "Oh, you can just swap her name in, swap my name in instead of hers." And and then basically, yes, you just tell us what happens with him throughout his history, and then the wife and the monkey also agree they'll help out as well.
Mm. Also, he's not sure if your one wants to marry him yet.
When he comes back, and it's like, Nene Doro, that thing about, you know, making an ass woman out of you, did you mean that? Like, she's like, no, I was just fooling around. He's like, oh, okay. No, wait!
Yes. Of course, future, I think the next episode of Time Bokan to air is going to be Oda Nobunaga as well. Cause...
What? We're going to have like three fucking episodes of Nobunaga?
Yes.
It's crazy.
that panel I'm wanting to do is gaining steam pretty quickly.
Yeah, all in one season.
Oops.
And then finally on the shorts list, Shonen Shibe Go Go Gamachan. For my money, the best thing which aired this week. An absolutely insane episode where the bully decides to make a Gomachan suit so that he can pretend to be Goma for his seal-loving brother.
I guess so his brother will finally love him and pay attention to him.
I know, he just wants to make his brother happy, that's all.
That's true, yeah.
But the brother finds the costume, puts it on, and pretends to be Goma for the day.
So he can feel that, like, he's not only, like, being with Gomachan, he is Gomachan. So he feels the love of the universe.
Yes.
And everyone around him that loves that giant seal. Has he gotten bigger? He looks a lot fatter today.
Yes.
He's eating very sweet, Gomachan.
He's a baby seal. He's going to get bigger. And then meanwhile, he finds the costume's disappeared. So he figures, my brother's put the costume on. So he goes out to find his brother and then mistakes Goma, who happens to have a sticking plaster on the back. For some reason, the costume he's made also has a sticking plaster on the back.
I think it's like there's some bad patches on it, but Goma has been attacked by them cats again.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. A child made the costume, so it would look a little bit tacky. Yes.
And so he's wondering why his brother's playing in the pond and he really ought to come home with him.
He's like, that's a great impression of Gomachan, bro, but how about you stop, like, slapping your fins together and swimming around and we get out of here? You know, it's kind of like, dude, and he's there for the whole evening because you see, like, the sun slowly set.
Yes, because his brother's going through. Well, first of all, he's, like, living up the life that only a seal could live, getting free meals at the Chinese restaurant. But then he was fed fish by the granddad and his secretary.
Well, initially he's kind of like, the granddad's just trying to share his ice pop with him. And he's like, I'm not eating that. That was in your mouth, old man. And he's like, all right, eat these raw fish.
So he then has a costume full of raw fish. And then the PE teacher shows up and says, Gomachan, come swimming with me.
Like, and the PE teacher has come across Gomachan. Apparently puking up like whole fish, and it's just like, oh, come on, let's go swimming, buddy. That'll cheer you up.
And so now he has a costume full of fish and water as he's dragged along
by the laughing PE teacher. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I love this episode. Absolutely love it because it's just one simple idea just taken to extremes, and it has the teacher in it, which is always guaranteed a good episode.
Hmm.
I watched it while partially drunk, and it was the greatest thing I could put on at that moment in time.
Oh dear.
Righty ho, on to full length things. What shall we start with this week? What was middling? Classicaloid, episode 7. The Mountain King.
Yeah, this one was a bit too, like, I think it's when they kind of get the central mystery and it's like, ooh, let's focus on drama and shit. And I'm like, I prefer it when you focus on, like, comedy.
It's got comedy. I mean, yeah, he's kind of like, it's Mozart in the sort of remembering his mother, and puts him in a bit of a mood when he discovers he's basically acting as the mother for Bambi.
Yeah, pretty much.
But he's mistaken for a strange cryptozoological creature who's living in the mountains.
Yeah, I think all he's done is put on a cape and wear a leaf over his face, but
and stick twigs.
Oh, he does have little antlers in his hat. Yeah, yeah. Yes.
And also just turn completely feral.
Yes.
Yes, obviously running around after people and robbing their shopping is kind of that's going to get you noticed. Yeah,
but we discover that yes, he's pretending to be a deer. And there's a Blair Witch Project parody at the start.
I did like the way it did look like Japanese television and, you know, people reacting to it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, those shows have been around forever. There's parodies of that type of show in Urasaitasura. So.
Okay.
Specifically of, like, people going into the mountains looking for weird creatures, which, of course, turn out to be characters from Urasaitasura.
I wish the video had a little, like, little circular window to the studio panel in the corner, where I've just seen the people running away in terror, and there's some like talk show host guy going, ha, 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 ha.
Yes. But yeah, then he thinks the deer's died in a lightning storm, and then he releases his music, and we get a Requiem, Mozart's Requiem, which makes everybody depressed, except for Beethoven.
Because you can't bring him down?
What no, it's because everyone's get full of regrets, isn't it? And of course,
oh, and he has no
he's
regrets.
Beethoven. I'm Beethoven. I have no regrets.
I have nothing.
I liked your ones, the landlord's reaction to that. It's like, dude, you've got fucking loads to regret, motherfucker.
But no, that's true to Beethoven. Like, a mountain of arrogance.
Yeah.
So, yes, yeah, so he could just wander straight through the lightning storm, not take any of this depression and regrets on his shoulders. And basically, Mozart comes out of it, and the deer basically just picks itself up. It was just stunned.
Yeah, it looks like it's lying down and its neck is broken, but I think it just, like, collapsed from all the junk food he was feeding, because there was a packet of open, like, crisps was right beside it or something. Like, dude, deers don't eat that.
Best scene, though, is the flashback of Mozart and his mother farting at each other.
That's not something that happened, so yeah.
Yes.
It was oddly touching. It was this wonderful moment between mother and child.
But the problem is, I've watched the next episode. The next episode is amazing.
Oh, okay.
Episode 8. The girls. Is it Girls' Day Out, I think it's called?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was the title.
Yeah, it's pretty phenomenal.
Okay.
Yeah, this was a good episode, but yeah, it didn't reach the heights of episode 4. And also episode 8 is pretty good. Episode 8, I would say, as you're getting ready for it, is the closest it's come to Osomatsu.
Wow.
That's nice.
But at the same time, it is still Classicaloid. It's not as bleak.
Oh, it's not going to do this.
Pure
It's not going to end in the way a Osomatsu episode ends. But yeah, in terms of character behaviour, it's the closest. Anything else to add on this episode of Classicaloid?
I think that's the most of it.
Nah.
Yeah, weirdly they say Mountain King is the title of the episode, but I think they refer to him as something else. Forest King.
Yeah, yeah. Subtitles. And Tchaikovsky goes mad as well, isn't it? Sorry, is it
Tchaikovsky? Oh, yeah, yeah. Tchaikovsky goes mad for mushrooms, yes.
Yeah, she initially seems to be on a monster, but she's brilliant mushrooms.
And Schubert buys a set of armor and a sword to go and kill Mozart.
He's like, finally, I have my excuse. I completely forgot about the Schubert thing of him being chased through like a streets and him getting his shopping robbed.
He's shopping
for Senpai.
Yes, he's got a massive crush still on Beethoven and still absolutely hates Mozart. Righty-ho, he does actually get to introduce himself as well.
Oh, yeah.
Next up, let's talk. Oh, let's go through the things. Flip flappers, any more flip flapper stuff?
The now times, no updates as to what's happening with that.
You have no idea what's happening in it.
Yeah, I watched it and I didn't care for it.
I don't know. I'll watch it and I'll get back to you whenever I feel anything pertinent worth bringing up.
Okay, my Haybot report this week is it was a Minecraft-themed episode. Also featuring an evil Xbox 360 called Mal 360. It was also Hal.
Oh.
Yes. So it worked a 2001 parody in, an Independence Day parody in, and loads of Minecraft parodies, and also generally parodying the idea of Western-style video games.
Oh, so that's why it's specifically going to Microsoft. Right, right.
Yeah.
Was there something else that was... that had an evil Xbox in it, or are you just maybe you just told me about this episode like a little while back?
Yeah, I mean, there's been another episode Twitter. Since then.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the one I'll discuss next week is it has less to discuss, but also more to discuss.
Okay.
So that's Haybot and Flip Flappers taken care of. Time Bokan. This episode was called "Set on Animal Chronicles." Was actually Donut Chronicles. For me, I thought this was the best one since the Caveman episode. Not as good as the Caveman, but the best one since the Caveman episode.
I think my favourite was the Caveman one because all the cast just forgot the plot and became feral.
But this was weirdly philosophical about donuts, of all things.
I think they're making a bit of leaps of logic as to how New York works, but all right, yeah.
I think the stuff about why cops are associated with donuts, though, I think that is
historically
accurate.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. There is a little history lesson in there if you ignore all the lies.
They'll get that PTA approval if it kills them.
Oh, dear.
So a set of Animal Chronicles is a big thing in Japan. It's a thing I've only heard of, but due to the fact that it's had anime adaptations.
Okay.
Have you heard of the author and any of his stories?
I haven't heard of none of them. No.
I think, because we see him here with his wolf, Lobo. I think I've heard of Lobo.
Yeah, I think I might have done that. So I might be familiar with one of the stories or something, rather than the author himself.
Lobo, the King of Krumpor, is the first story of author Ernest Thompson Seton's 1898 book, Wild Animals I Have Known. So, yes, in reality, he went to New York to write some novels after living in Canada for a while. And instead of doing... But in the true history, he was actually writing a book about donuts.
Yeah, he was trying to review every donut shop in the world? Or just in America? I'm not sure.
But he somehow ends up in a donut contest.
Yeah, it's New York's big donut-a-thon or something.
Yes.
You got to fight these cops to be king of donuts.
he's talking about how the hole in the donut represents a world of possibilities.
Yeah, he's always looking through the donuts as if that will guide him to the next donut shop.
And wandering into kitchens with his wolf and then commenting on people's donuts. And then quite rightly thrown out because... Who just wanders into restaurant kitchens with animals?
Yeah, it's not hygienic, as you said. I've been like, is that a thing now? Because there's like two donut shops opened in my town recently, and is that just the trend now?
Donuts
are the new thing? Okay.
Is it? Okay. It's not reached here yet.
Let's take this otherwise, kind of cheap, sort of sweet junk food thing, and just repackage it as some artisan handcrafted confectionery thing.
Yeah, yeah. Don't get me wrong, I like donuts, but it's a weird thing that's like, oh, I guess that's a thing now. That's what's in now.
You can buy this one donut that's got, I don't know, fucking red velvet cake in it, or you can go down to the supermarket and get like a pack of six of them for the same price.
Sure, sure, sure.
But you can spend your money wherever you want.
Yeah.
Listeners at home.
Any other thoughts on this episode?
I thought it was pretty fun. I did like the way you won what's her name on the baddies team. They were all like, oh, she knows how to bake and everything. She was showing some other way besides her usual kind of greediness, you know?
Yeah.
It's a weird kind of contrast for her as a character.
Okay, next up, let's go with... I'm trying to think, what's the easiest thing to talk about? Drifters, probably. Because it was just a load of fighting.
Yeah. Yep. Two big fights.
Episode 7, Chaos Diver. In which they fight the French. So, yes, is it Gilderay? Yes, we learned that apparently he thought that Joan of Arc had gone to hell, so that was why he was committing so many vile acts to make sure that he went to hell.
He's right, he just murdered us because of love.
Yeah. Thankfully, the show does not go into exactly how vile
what he did.
He was yes. doing.
It's going to assume people are probably familiar with this infamous historical character.
So he gets to fight. Yoichi fights him.
Yoichi fights Gilda Ray, and Toyohisa takes on Joan of Arc.
Yes.
And obviously, Oda just hides in the woods and fucks with people.
Yes.
Brilliant.
This has the most D&D thing I've ever seen in any anime, which is where the Octobrist. What's her name again? It is
Orminu.
Yes, basically she's got this spell, this wall.
Wall of stone. Yes. Yeah, yeah, that's a standard spell.
Yes, so she's got two left, and so Toyohisa comes up with this amazing plan, which is just like when a player asks a DM, "Can I do this with this spell?"
Yeah, and it's like, I guess that would work. I mean, like, it's a defensive spell, but that way it would work offensively.
You can make the wall pop up another wall and just fire me, like, out of a cannon right at the enemy.
So it ends with him discovering that Joan of Arc is a woman.
And then he's not interested in taking her head.
No. So he just leaves her at the bottom of a well.
Which is good, mean, but okay.
Which is good, because she's fire powers, so that's probably the best to put her.
And no matter how many arrows that Yoichi puts into Gil's, he just keeps on going. But then luckily, the Wild Bunch come to the rescue.
See, I thought the arrows thing was like a D&D thing as well. Well, like, arrows only do like 2 points of damage, so...
No. He's shooting it in the eyes.
I don't care if it's gone into his eye. He can still keep moving. just has all of it in HP. Yeah.
It's like his devotion is such to Joan that, you know, he'll keep on going... If he thinks that he's still alive, and I'll follow you to the ends of the earth, no matter, nothing will stop me, even death.
Yeah, even being blown apart by a Gatling gun.
I was thinking, did he have the spear that your one was impressed with in Ninja Girl? Because he has that, like, triform thing, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I was going to say, is that another crossover between
them? Yeah, because don't they compare him to, I can't remember the character.
Yeah!
The famous monk who...
Yeah, I think it's something like that.
And I was wondering, similar weapon.
I was wondering, was that specifically what they were talking about?
From the Yubichi's associate, who's
time
unaligned. He says, "Oh, he's like Benkei from the old
days.
He
just Benkei,
never gives
yeah.
up, kind of thing."
Yeah,
well, Benkei was like a big giant guy with a spear. So, yes. So here we go.
The Wild Bunch and the two tacticians show up in the horse
guard. Well, only one tactician if you were paying attention.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you're quite right. Mm.
Yes, they blow apart, but he's still moving. But yes, Oda Nobunaga is, of course, like, again, somebody else taken with the idea of, what the fuck is that? It shoots.
That is so fucking cool. They're gonna lose their shit when they see that plane. You know what I mean?
It flies and it has guns in it. Oh my god!
That is crazy.
Oh, it's so cool.
I guess that's pretty much it. I think all the talking's in the next episode.
Yeah.
Well, and they said they're like, okay, we're finally out of bullets for the machine gun. But you know, like, that's the first thing Nobunaga's going to be like, hey, dwarves, this, like 15 of these.
Have you watched the next episode yet?
Yes. No, I said I wouldn't just in case end up talking about it again.
You're pretty close to Oda Nobunaga's plans in the next episode.
I'm seeing how his like tricksy little mind works. So yeah, well, he was just taking out soldiers in the woods with the elves, wasn't he?
He was.
In this episode,
It's just like Nobunaga is like one. Oh yeah, that's like the muskets and the lead balls that can kill anything. But then he finds out there's more than one kind of bullet. Oh, this changes everything. They're also reveals everybody with a working pair of eyes and a brain knows by now that yeah, the leader of the Octopuses are Vaino Seme.
Yeah,
because he introduces himself.
Oh, that's right.
It's good fun this episode, and look forward to discuss next week's episode because there's a lot of talking again.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't a lot happening in this one besides fighting, like you say, but it was really enjoyable.
Yeah, because I was like, once they did that Wall of Stone launching thing, I was like, yes, this is my idea of a D&D campaign.
Again, making the D&D comparison, like, you can go so far with just, like, the role-playing of talking and stuff, but when you do, like, a fight, the dice roll tends to slow it down, so that's why it dragged out for a whole episode.
Yes, could well be.
Oh, dear.
Right, on to the more complicated things to talk about. There was no Tiger Mask this week, so we can have to do that. So let's do the other sports thing. Yuri on Ice. Episode 8. It's JJ style. Oh, sorry. Yuri versus Yuri. The horror. Russellcom. I will. Okay.
Or Russellcom.
Yeah, that. Cup. Short program. We should get a whole new bunch of ice skaters to hear the inner monologues of.
They all have their own story. Yeah. Some of those stories are weird and creepy.
Yeah.
But yes, they leave the best to last.
Yeah, it's mostly we've been focusing on Yuri Katsuki for the last few episodes now, how he's kind of getting his program down. Here he seems to he comes out, does his better than ever done before, is on fire, but the focus is more on Yurio and how he's been getting on, and now he's kind of, I guess, the underdog, where Yuri is now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, Yuri's kind of like the guy to beat right now, so we're kind of focusing on everyone who's trying to, which is a really fun way to turn the show around.
Yeah, because again, Yurio, he's only a 15-year-old lad, and despite his gruff attitude, he could be feeling a little bit intimidated by these bigger boys who are skating fantastically.
Yeah, they've been professionals for so much longer. They have so much, I think he literally says in this experience, in this episode, that while he's lacking his experience, and these guys have that in spades over him,
He's also lacking his granddad being there.
Yeah, and that you can see that affecting him, right?
Yeah. We also get the Indonesian guy who's quite stoic, and then there's a brother and sister and their mate.
I thought that was their trainer, or what was that? I wasn't entirely sure who that was.
Because it's the other guy who doesn't do as well as the brother does. They all seem to be hanging out together. And the sister's the brother's like, I'm doing it for my sister. She inspires me. And the sister's like, you're not going to win unless you can start doing this without me being here.
Yeah, I mean, it's impressive, and the commentators are saying as much as, that's a move that's only been able to pull it off by his own sister. And it's kind of but you need to be your own guy kind of thing. And he's like, but I love my sister so much, man. It's in a way, that's kind of weird.
Was there anybody else other than JJ?
He does steal the show a little.
Yeah,
I feel like there might have been someone else.
Yeah, the other thing that I made is when they start throwing cats at Yuri after he's done his thing, and then someone manages to throw a cat. Hair band,
yeah,
a cat ear hair band right onto his head. Perfect throw. You've won the prize.
But then JJ comes out, he's got his gimmick, and his program is based on a song. It's all about how cool the JJ is.
And he's Canadian, and his two trainers are they're not super stereotypically Canadian, but if you saw them and you had to guess what country they came from, you would say those two people come from Canada.
Or at least Minnesota.
Yes.
But JJ is quite talented. I mean, he's not going to not tell you about it, so you'll know. You'll know when you see him. Because he not only skates, he's not only the head guy in his own band, and he writes his own songs, and he does his own routines, but... it's like a whole corporate branding thing with him.
Yeah, it's JJ style.
Cute to stay.
And then he's very demeaning to Yurio as well.
So it's don't be...
It's kind of... When I saw stuff like that, I was thinking, maybe that's why we saw Yurio so aggressive to Yuri in the first episode, because people have... people who have been doing it on the pro level had been treating him like that up to this point.
writing him off.
Just some fucking nobody kid who has no titles under his belt or anything, you know.
Yeah, and maybe he doesn't know what to do with Yuri Getsuku, who was, for most part, actually being quite polite and nice to him.
Exactly, yeah.
And like Yuri Katsuki, he treats Yuri more like a rival and says, well, put on like a great display on his Leicester, or like a show that we have been wrestling on our laurels now, and I want like Yuri to be, you know, like competing with me, and we'll meet in the final, and all this kind of thing. He's just doing more like good natured like sportsmanship.
Yes. In this episode, you see, like, most of the time Yuri tends to not ignore the other skaters, but kind of focus on his own routine and shit. And obviously he'll freak himself out if he hears their scores and stuff. But he's actually cheering on Yurio.
Yes. They also point out that he does better when he's not on familiar ground.
Yeah, where he's kind of like you said, when he's the underdog, he seems to push himself that much more.
But I think there is comparisons with JJ and Yuri as well, in that they've both picked out, they've both got song playing music which is specifically for them and about them.
I guess Yuri's is a little less pretentious.
Yes, but it's still called Yuri.
Yuri, you're so great. That's not the lyrics.
But it is still called Yuri on Ice, is the music he's using.
True.
But he's just a guy who just loves skating. I'm just Yuri, I'm ice. And this last year, it just happened to be competing. It doesn't need to be no thing. It's like skating.
Isn't JJ's song like JJ the King or something like that?
Sorry about that, yes.
Yeah.
It is amazing, though. Particularly his facial expressions when he's spinning.
He put a lot of effort in there, yeah.
But yeah, but he's the same thing. He's one of those characters who makes the point that he wants, it's about the music and the dance. And so, rather than just a performance or the technical ability of it, it is the entire package for him as well. It's just he has a huge ego on himself. But yeah, this was great. But also, we get these cutaways to the dog staring at these wrapped buns.
I didn't think that was like a Chekhov's gun. but I thought that was just, that's the dog being cute as fuck. And it's like, no.
Drama.
that introduces quite the drama at the end of it.
Yes.
It's the soap opera thing. Like, you can almost hear
Yes, so the dog is choking on these buns that it's eaten. It might not survive.
Hit him with the wrappers on, yeah.
Yes, so Victor's got to rush back to Japan to look after the dog.
But he initially refuses, like, because it's like, dude, I can't leave you in the middle of this. And Yuri himself knows that it's like, I didn't leave in the middle of my fucking thing, and I just couldn't be there for my dog when it died, and I felt it forever. So, no, you got to do this, Victor.
You gotta save original, whatever that dog is called. Cause
yeah, I keep thinking
dog
the dog's called Victor.
And then after your dog has passed away, and
yeah.
You gotta save one of them.
And so, yes, we're gonna get the odd couple next week, because he's asked
Yakov
to look after Yuri for a day.
I did like Yakov's reaction. It's like, oh, Yakov, you've always been the coach for me. And he's like, oh, you finally come crawling back to me. He's like, no, you be his coach tomorrow. pretty brilliant.
It is pretty good, and I like the mechanism of the storytelling of the shows to introduce these new characters and sort of get like a mini story with them.
And you keep seeing the parallels between that and the main story, or how their own story is how their own story is affected by the main plot of the show.
It was a good show.
Yeah, I think this is just the nature of how competitive figure skating just goes. Like, you know, and this, like, you will see this these same things being performed over again, the different levels of competency and complication. But kind of like true that, we're kind of seeing the kind of refinement over there. It's kind of a different way for a sports anime, but also you see them, you know, they learn a new technique or a new skill. But here you're kind of seeing them kind of do this one thing, but get super, super good at doing it.
Yeah, and it's such a very different way to do it. Yeah, absolutely, like you say. And I guess it makes sense that from the animator's point of view, where it's like, well, we don't have to fucking do this like the once, and then we can like just up and change
a little different.
But again, because we're seeing that animation kind of refined and done slightly differently, it becomes interesting to watch as well.
Yeah, and also it's like a sport where there's like a set amount of time for it to happen in,
so you can fit that within the confines of an episode.
You can, exactly.
It's not structurally it works very well.
It's not like having to do a 90-minute football match across multiple episodes.
Racist episode season.
Yeah, yeah. It makes sense that you can view like the first or second half of a contest within an episode.
Hmm. Right, final thing tonight. Something which may have more events in it than JoJo's and Dragon Ball combined. Bungo Stray Dogs, episode 20, Though the Mind May Be Wrong. In which that creepy little kid you were hating last episode, you suddenly get some sympathy for him.
Yeah, it kind of turns it around and goes like, oh, okay. That's actually kind of...
Amongst many, many other things. God, so much stuff happens this episode.
Mm. Mm. Right, so, yeah, we start where we left off, where...
Cheryl is confronting Atsushi, and she's got a mop, like dead to rights, but then Kyoko turned up and like, hey, drop Atsushi. You're going to talk with the answer to me.
Yep, and she gets a good cut in on him, but doesn't quite get him. Just nicks him on the neck and grabs him and jumps off a bridge, which may be reminiscent of an earlier scene from the last season, which I thought was nice, yeah. Mm. That was a good way to do it. So, and he's obviously very concerned that she'll kind of fall into her, I was going to say like murderous ways, but basically what she's been trained to do by her inserting her. Like he's saying, you could have just ran away and be out of this whole fucking war thing. And she's like, yeah, but Armed Detective Agency, that's my only fucking home. Like, I'm going to protect it. And he's like, yeah, but the only way she can protect it is by murder. That's the only thing she knows how to do good.
Yeah, it doesn't help when the cops show up and then they say, hey, you kids are all right? We'll get you out of water. And, Carnage, who? Not Carnage. She's looking for a mass murderer. She's a young girl wearing Japanese clothing. It's like, hang on there. Don't move! And
I did like the thing of the thing was like, it's a 14-year-old girl dressed in traditional Japanese clothing. And he's like, hey, little girl, what age are you? And she's like,
And so she's afraid of him saying, oh, she's going to... I can go murder crazy right now just to get out of this situation. But then I think I've forgotten it. I'll find your other name. Who wrote Moby Dick? I've forgotten his
name. Herman Melville.
He just keeps getting called Herman in this. Like, really informal. Herman Melville, the man with the fakest beard.
Yeah. Such a bad beard.
That's great.
He turns up with his space whale, and which functions as some kind of floating battleship.
With a cloaking device.
Yes.
So they kind of...
Their real target all along was Atsushi. So he gets kidnapped in short order.
Yeah, and also, is before this we've seen... what's their faces from the guild? The ones who got beaten up by...
Yeah, we see how they capture... is it just Q, isn't it?
No, before that. The bit where...
Nathaniel Hawthorne and...
Margaret Mitchell.
Margaret Mitchell is like... It's like, Nathaniel Hawthorne, yeah, me much about that, but it's like, yeah, from Margaret Mitchell, she took like an old...
He jumped in the way of so many bullets. Well, figurative bullets.
Took 17 shadow spears like right to the chest and ruptured all her major organs. She's lucky to be alive.
Yeah.
How is there any meat left in her?
So, Hawthorne apparently seems to quit.
He says, "I'm going to restore her family's honor. I'm not working for you anymore, Mr. Fitzgerald."
Yes, which sends Fitzgerald into a... You kind of get the full view of his personality about how he treats people as objects.
I did like that, the manicness of it. And your one, obviously, what's your one who writes Little Women?
Louisa May Alcott.
Yes.
Their tactician.
He's going like, give me the fucking crazy plan. She's like, oh, I don't know about that, sir. All y'all are my property, and I got to protect my property.
I can buy and sell all your sorry asses right here now.
It's the closest he comes to caring about anyone who works for him, but it's a real dick way to do it.
Yeah, it's like, you damaged my property, and also one of my properties walked off.
Yeah. That's pretty much what's upset him. That's something he considered his, has decided to go, fuck you.
And so we also see, as you say, Q walking up to Howard
Phillips
Lovecraft.
The worst person she could have possibly tried to use, or he could have tried to use his powers on. It's like, I'll just send Lovecraft insane. And Lovecraft's like, what?
Some kind of silhouette or shadow of some unspeakable horrifying vision, which creeps out the creepy little boy with the mind control powers.
But it's the way Lovecraft's, it's just so mild.
Yeah, he's calm about the entire situation, where he's like, it's like, hey, why don't you play with a little kid? And he's like, play with a little kid. And he imagines what that would be like, and is like, ooh, that does sound pleasant.
Oh, what's he doing? Oh, he's making balloon animals with his tentacles.
And he tries to make a poodle or something, isn't it?
Yes.
With his tentacles. And it's just a knot of gross-ass tentacles. And it's just like, dude, no. Stop it. so that I assume he was just waiting out as bait. That was the entire plan.
Yeah.
Because that seems to be the crazy freaking plan that they have.
Mm. Yeah, because they wanted to he was part of this weird plan. They capture this kid.
And they'll...
So you got John Steinbeck with the control plan. So they're going to,
control it. He can make you sense through... He can put your senses through on plants.
Yeah, so, well, that's part of it. You can kind of... Because he can like make Grant's bro and kind of conflict you and stuff. But like,
yeah.
So you can send the senses as well through those plants. You're going to plug Q into the roots of this tree. And then those roots then are going to link up to all the plants in the city. And so anybody, just brushing off or anything going near any of the plants.
Anyone who has ever heard a tree.
It counts as triggering Q's power. So, ergo, Q can now mind control the entire city.
I think Duman says it's like it'll affect at least 20% of the population at this rate.
Yeah.
So, you have a bunch of crazy fucking zombie people running around flipping trucks and stuff.
Yes. Sushi's trying to escape. And he has to get assistance from
what's her face?
Lucy Maud Montgomery.
I'd forgotten about her, I'll be honest with you. I was like, wait, who's that again? Oh
yes, from last season.
Got demoted to scullery girl.
Yes.
Yeah, because her powers don't work if you know how they work. But Fitzgerald was just like, yeah, but she still said she'd stay on, so why not?
Yes, but then she's found other ways to make her powers work beyond just using them to attack people.
Well, storing parachutes for one.
Yes. And it kind of feels like there's now going to be some sort of love triangle between, with her added into it.
Potentially, yeah. That seemed to be the implication, all right.
She helps him escape this giant floating weaponized whale.
And I thought it was kind of good, because I figured that's the way they were going to go with it, especially what with her being demoted. But it was kind of nice, like, you don't know what pain is like. Look, I've been burned by a poker. And he's like, yeah, I know what that's like. Check it. Lifts up his shirt kind of thing. He's been through the same kind of shit. And he kind of makes her empathize with the people on the ground.
Yes. But as he's leaping out of this, he gets attacked by Mark Twain.
I'm not exactly sure what his powers are.
No, I'm not either.
I know he has a chibi Huckleberry Finn, and
he's got two living bullets.
Can pilot bullets. They can literally pilot bullets.
Apparently, he with his ability, he can shoot with absolute accuracy by attaching either Hook or Tom to one of his bullets. Since their minds are also linked, he can perform long distance surveillance using them.
Okay, so. It's kind of like that one lady at a Helsing, if you ever saw that. She had a bullet. She fired off a gun. You can kind of just make it whiz around and go A direction or anywhere else. Or Emperor, maybe.
Yeah.
But he has two stands.
Yeah, so they're cute.
A gun is cute. You go put some...
So that appears to fuck Atsushi up. But then as he's heading towards the ground, he turns into a tiger.
He makes peace with the tiger in himself or something like that. It's some kind of esoteric thing where the tiger is fucking killing him. And he's like, I forgive you. I hate me too kind of shit. And the tiger's like, oh, I'm sorry.
I think it's so because we see him, his outline. He seems to go like full tiger to land on the grass. I suppose if you turn it into like a whole cat, you'd always land on your feet.
That was exactly what I thought as well. I was like, of course. Lands on his feet. He's a cat. And apparently they're like the further that a cat falls, the more likely they're gonna land on their feet and survive.
Yeah. They kinda like the flaps of their skin kinda parachute out like that. Like a flying squirrel.
I'm not sure it works on magic tigers, but sure, why not?
I think it's more likely to work on magic tigers.
Yeah. It's more likely to work on magic tigers if they're dropping an invisible whale in the sky. Yeah, okay.
Can we get Mythbusters on this and see what they're saying?
That's going to be difficult to prove.
Throw a tiger out of a plane and see if it lands on its feet.
And never blow it up. If that doesn't work, we'll blow it up.
So he gets to the ground.
And he's just trying to run while friggin' Mark Twain is trying to snipe him from the sky. He can't hit him because he's too fast.
But he keeps on seeing these like weird objects littered around.
I thought those were part of Twain's powers. Like, what are those little fucking eggs? Yeah, because you don't know how the powers work. So.
Yes, but no, it's a plan. The man with the plan. Who basically just trusted that Atsushi would be leaping out of this giant whale that he was kidnapped from.
Yeah, it's the most logical course of action.
I know Atsushi, and I think I do. You should be jumping off a plane any minute now.
Yes, it's all part of Dazai's plan, and he's got this... it's like some sort of... how would you describe it?
The little eggs like pop open and put up like a cloud of sparkly fucking mist.
It's small screen basically, so
and it's blocking out like heat signatures and everything else. Mark Twain says, and he's like pretty impressed by the whole situation. Oh, we never mentioned that he has the doll, so Dazai can actually turn it off.
Yes,
turn off the zombies or whatever.
Oh yeah, that's what they're after. Yes. Atsushi has another plan. And that is, why don't we team up with the Port Mafia?
It's just crazy enough to work.
Yeah, but I think also, besides the mind control plan, the guild also is just going to firebomb the entire city if they don't get what they want.
Yes, basically, and we also learn what they want is an indestructible book.
Yes, that's right, a book that can't be damaged by anything. And, I mean, like, it's not just even firebomb, like, they still have Q. They can just release this plan whenever the fuck they want.
Yeah.
Apparently, Atsushi was kind of like a, what do they call him, like a marker for where this book was?
They said a tiger beetle.
Yeah.
And I'm not exactly sure what that is.
No,
but...
I don't understand the reference either.
Mm. It's probably something to do with the book.
It could be, yeah.
Actually, it was like, I thought it was a little kind of funny. It was like when Atsushi is just about to lay out the plan to team up with the girl. It's like, remember this thing I read in the book once? It's like, don't the something blood may be wrong, the mind may ever be wrong, or something like that. It's like, oh, yeah, it's a quick quote. Well, actually, I wrote it.
Yeah. The quote is at the end of the fucking episode. It's like, and who was that man? It was you.
Or your namesake.
Yeah.
We apparently live in a world where people love naming people after famous authors.
How do we know that the
first
real...
name and last name? Yeah.
How do we know the real Atsushi Nakadiva wasn't actually a were-tiger? Like, nope, we never saw him in a full moon.
History never recorded this fact. But yeah.
But yeah, it is really hard to believe this is the same show that was the first four episodes of this season.
I know it's not really doing the same thing as season one, but season one like established so much, and this thing kind of... You can't really tell which way it's going to go with it, and it's really fun to just watch the pieces fucking fall where they may. Yeah, it's a completely different show from that fucking miniseries.
But this episode, it's moved so rapidly, this episode. It's like so much
so much is happening in it. Yeah.
I think, like, even between actually getting captured and being brought up to meet F. Scott Fitzgerald, there was a couple of days in between the one and
I think
one
it does a skip of like 4 days or something. Yeah, you're right. Mm. So a lot of shit goes down.
Yeah, I'm back to loving this show again now.
Yep.
The foul taste of the first few episodes is out of my mouth.
Yeah. You'll like next week's one as well.
That is the one thing I haven't watched yet of the things which we've already aired.
Yeah, I mean, like, the amount of things this week that are just like, holy shit, that was awesome. I can't wait for the next one. Some of them are already out, so very tempting. But yeah, it's been a really good week for it.
Good. Anything else to add?
I think that's pretty much everything.
Yep.
No.
I'm looking forward to discussing next week's Tiger Mask as well, because it gets incredibly meta this week's episode.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll try and get up to it by then. I got as far as the fabled episode 4. I was a fan.
If that doesn't hook you, nothing will. Yeah.
Right, that ends this week's episode of Let's Go JoJo. Be back here next week to hang with the Let's Go gang. And in the meantime, please check out our regular podcast at secretofthesailormadness.blogspot.com. And dynamitingthebrain.com. Goodbye.
Bye.
JJ!